Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Jos.
Good morning. Good morning.
You belong to a special group, or how you'd say, organization?
Yeah, so I'm working with Engineers Without Borders Australia. We're a non-for-profit organization that works with developing communities and provides technical assistance with engineering solutions.
How you choose the community to work with?
So we actually form partnerships with either local communities or local NGOs and organisations. And I think that's really the key to the way we work, is forming these partnerships and relationships. So an organisation such as Pachandical and Forest might approach us, and we'll sit down and have a talk about the work that they're doing. And then we look at if our values align and if we're thinking about the same sort of things. So in the case of Pachandical and Forest, and Joss might elaborate on this a little bit later, they're working with a number of villages. Is it 26, Joss? 26 villages in the local region, and working on a variety of projects within those communities. So, for example, we had a volunteer that worked with Pachandical and Forest looking at toilets and sanitation for the village of Debbie-Coolum. So we provide some technical assistance to look at helping them in those installations. Mm-hmm. But it does, I think, it is quite a strong relationship, and there is learning on both sides. So, you know, we learn just as much from Pachandical and Forest as they learn from us on the technical expertise. And we do form long-term relationships with the organisation as well. So we've been working with Pachandical and for probably around 4 years now, and hopefully it'll be a long time into the future. And throughout that time, we've had a number of volunteers there on 12-month placements, helping them with a variety of projects.
If you think back, it was started in 2003, yeah?
Yeah, around about that time.
How it started? Where was the need? I mean, how you guys come up with that?
So Engineers Without Borders started with the vision of our founding CEO, Danny Almagor. And Danny was actually...
What? Say again, please.
Oh, his name is Danny Almagor.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's an engineer, and aerospace engineer, in fact. And while he was going through his university studies, he was asked to design a plane that could drop bombs on a village. So their final year engineering project was to design a plane to come up with the most efficient ways to drop bombs. And Danny sort of thought about this for a little while and said, why are they making us work on projects like this? Why not take the exact same project but get the students to design, you know, how to drop, you know, maybe crates of rice or water, you know, in a humanitarian engineering sort of context? You know, why isn't there more consideration of the social aspects and the cultural aspects in engineering? And so he thought about that for a long time and had a look around and decided to found Engineers Without Borders Australia, really to, start looking at social aspects, cultural aspects, and sustainability within engineering, and really started pushing the humanitarian engineering movement within Australia. So we work with a variety of communities, and we also work with within the corporate sector within Australia as well. And so the reason why we actually do that is, again, to make change and to get people thinking about those aspects that I just mentioned previously. So just to take a step back again, we have maybe around 4,000 members within Engineers Without Borders, and a lot of them are made up of students and professionals within the engineering sector.
4,000, that's from Australia?
From Australia. So there are a number of Engineers Without Borders groups around the world, which we do talk with, and we have very close relationships with Engineers Without Borders in New Zealand and the UK, and there's also Engineers Without Borders Canada and US and Germany, and so there's a number of these organisations.
His idea of spread it around the world then?
It actually started in Canada, okay. But within Australia, so all the organisations do communicate and work together, but they're also independent organisations as well. So Danny founded the organisation within Australia.
And within the team, if you are more sustainable and humanitarian oriented, you probably got not only engineers, you got also other professions, yeah?
Yeah, that's very true. You can't do it with engineers alone. We have social scientists working within the group. We have people who specialise in looking at management and logistics. There's accountants. There's environmental scientists, there's anthropologists, there's a whole range of people that work together. And that is particularly important. That's a really good point of having these multidisciplinary teams because all of these projects are more than just the engineering side of things. You do need to have a variety of skills to work within a community and to make these projects successful. Mm. And other than the work with communities that we do, we also work with a lot of universities in Australia and as well. So we run educational programs, predominantly in engineering disciplines, but also now starting to get into some others as well, such as science and business and social science, where we run programs based on projects that we have going overseas and get the students to identify with real-world projects and start learning about aspects of sustainability and especially in terms of the social and the environmental aspects, which often get left off. And, you know, people tend to focus on the economic aspects in engineering much more. So we're trying to incorporate those foundations into the engineering curriculum within Australia.
So are we actually, does fit in category of your, so to say, interesting projects or places to learn very much, yeah?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's so much innovation here within Oroville and so many people who are trying new ideas and looking at ways of making technologies more appropriate, for example, and looking at working with communities and how that can all tie together. So we work very closely with Pajandical and Forest here in Oroville and also Sunlit Energy as well. Mm-hmm.
Josh, where did you hear about Engineers Without Borders?
I think it could have been when they were linked to another group just up the coast at the East-West Foundation, at the Uluru Children's Home. And that link, I think, came from the fact that that children's home is organized, financed very much from Melbourne. And at one point, they had a volunteer there, two volunteers, doing a study at the children's home and on their renewable energy and appropriate energy elements that they needed in that campus. And so two people, Danny and Rebecca, spent 6 months sort of working with Oroville units, also putting together possibilities. I think that was one of the first contacts, but then because we're in Melbourne often, we met up with them. And another link is to a group in Melbourne called Ceres. Ceres is a community environment centre in inner city Melbourne, and they have a close relationship with EWB also. Ceres, we've had a relationship with them for some 15 years, and they come every year to Oroville. They come as a group and help teach in our village schools, particularly environmental education. Ceres itself is this 15-acre environment centre, I think one of the most inspirational places on the planet.
In Melbourne.
In Melbourne, yeah. So that was another link. And the first volunteer that came was Nick, who worked on GIS, GPS solutions, village mapping.
Rapida and those things?
Yeah, he worked with us, he worked with Village Action, developing those Rapida, and it's all on Google now. He still operates it, he still relates to the Oroville GIS village solutions. he'll be back next month for another period. He relates continually, continually to us, and related, for instance, in something that Jenny perhaps will explain a bit more, the Engineers Without Borders challenge. Would you like to explain that?
Sure.
But for instance, Jenny's going to explain the challenge, and a few weeks ago almost, I was in Perth helping to judge the finalists of the challenge. But before that, I was in Melbourne at a conference with Jenny, a big conference with some of the leading engineering people of the world, almost, companies like Arup Engineering, I think is the largest engineering company in the world. And I remember that in the keynote address by one of the heads of Arup Engineering, he said, maybe within 10 years, Engineers Without Borders might be the most influential engineering organization on the planet. This is about Imagineering. This is about sustainability in engineering. It was a very inspirational few days meeting the heads of engineering and partners, the EWB, the Engineers Without Borders partners, from Aboriginal communities in Australia, from Vietnam, from Timor, from India, other groups in India, Thailand. It was all over. Indonesia. It was fascinating.
But it's also probably a sign that we as humanity, we are changing, yeah? Mm-hmm. So sustainable as idea, if you don't have practical solutions, it cannot really work, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's where, as I said before, a place like Oroville, our humble efforts here are seen as whether think tanks, places where it's been going on for many decades, mm-hmm. quietly but surely, but we've got some answers, particularly for rural communities, rural India. And that links into the sort of vision and the work which others here in Oroville are now moving towards, seeing Oroville reaching out into the bioregion, being a training centre, being a place where India can use those skills and to build it up as a rural technical institution, to bring real solutions, technical solutions to rural India. And this is already talking at minister level in Delhi, and they love the idea. They love the idea of Oroville's approach to bioregion development, its approach to watershed development, seeing the whole watershed. And this is exciting. This is meetings are going on at the moment. In spite of this disaster we're all going through, you see the way forward.
It's about practical solutions, and it's also about sustainable solutions as well. And the sustainability is really the key. And I know that Oroville focuses quite strongly on that sustainability aspect too, where you are not only considering the economic benefits of projects, but also more importantly, the social and the environmental as well. And you really need that holistic approach when you're moving forward. And that's something that Engineers Without Borders feels very strongly about and is promoting within the universities and the corporate sector, is that push to a holistic, sustainable approach in everything that we do. And one of the projects that we work on to get this into engineering education is the EWB Challenge, which Joss is talking about. So
that was that challenge was what?
So the EWB Challenge is a design program for engineering students, and currently it's run predominantly in first-year engineering subjects at 26 universities across Australia and New Zealand, and we also have another 10 in the UK participating in the program as well. So just in Australia and New Zealand, this is about 9,000 students. And what actually happens is Engineers Without Borders goes to one of our community partners. So in 2011, the community partner for the EWB Challenge was Pachandakulam Forest. So EWB, Engineers Without Borders, sat down with Pachandakulam and looked at a variety of design projects that they're currently working on with the small rural village of Devikulam. So these projects range from water and sanitation to alternative energy supplies, housing, even looking at roads and other infrastructure as well. And we then take those projects that the organisation is working on back to the universities in Australia. And the universities will work on these projects for, you know, one semester, two semesters throughout the year, and really kind of delve down into them. What makes this so successful in the universities is that they're real-world projects. So the students can conceptualise this village, and they see a lot of photos, they see video footage, they're able to hear about the actual real work that's going on the ground so that they can imagine it. Both Pachandakulam and EWB provides a lot of resources for the students and academics to actually do this, and helps the academics embed it into curriculum so that they're really using these projects to teach sustainability and to teach humanitarian engineering. We also provide an opportunity for students to connect with the organisation through an online discussion forum where they can ask questions and really start to probe different aspects of the culture and different aspects of the society so that they can make their design solutions really appropriate for the context. So once the students work on these projects, the universities then submit some of their top projects, which university can submit up to four, to Engineers Without Borders for review. And then these projects are reviewed by an industry panel made up from companies like ARUP and SKM and BHP Billiton and a variety of other members of the corporate society in Australia as well. And in conjunction with Engineers Without Borders members and Pachandakulam Forest members as well. And those projects are then reviewed. And then toward the end of the year, the top projects, then the students get an opportunity to present their ideas at an international engineering education conference back to Pachandakulam Forest. And so this was what Joss was talking about, the conference in Perth, where he attended, and two other members of his organisation, Parvati and Sumati, came over to Australia as well to hear the students' ideas and to look at some of the concepts that they've come up with, and also to provide some feedback to the students as well. So all of the ideas that the students come up with then go back to the organisation, and we're just getting to the point where this year we'll review some of those ideas from the students, and one of those may go on to become the next project that Pachandakulam Forest works on and that EWB helps out with as well. So it's a great way of getting the students to look at the ideas and getting ideas for the community.
And in the past, you probably used some of their solutions they came up with, right? In Pachandakulam or Devikulam?
Did you say in the past or the future?
In the past, you used some of the solutions they came up with.
So the program started in 2011 at the student stage, December the students presented their ideas. So we're just in the process of reviewing the ideas and getting to the stage where we might implement them in the future.
I understood that you maybe worked with it.
Yeah.
So you might use in the future.
Exactly. This is practical. Mm. A month ago, we were in Perth. These two community workers who'd never been on a plane before, definitely not been out of India, and it was a hoot. It was great. And there we were in Perth, and these groups, seven groups, flew from different parts of Australia and New Zealand, and they presented to us, and together with some other people on the panel, we actually selected what was the first, second, third, and gave a lot of comments. Mm. From all that information, the details of these projects were extraordinary. I mean, they came with maybe 50, 60, 100 pages of information. They came with models, physical models, you know, which they showed. It was all about toilets, and purifying water, and solid waste management. So three items in the community. Now, we're in the process of going through those solutions that they came up with in detail, culling out what is good and bad, what's interesting. What we thought was to sit with other people in Oroville, the Hemants and Twans and whatever, and Lucas, you know, on some of these aspects, forming a little group here that could review it. From those solutions, come up with what is practical, what we feel is the best of it, take that back to the village, because the village has not been involved at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This is important. That would be very complicated. The village, we're involved with the village development committee, and implementing programs but not involved in the challenge. That would be too much to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it stopped Pichandikulan answering questions through EWB to these 9,000 students. But now we take ideas back to the village and see how it fits in with the village, what the village thinks is appropriate.
Mm.
The final solutions to make Devikulam a place where there would be perhaps many different models of toilets and more than we've got now, or water systems, a real demonstration place, those systems would be implemented, perhaps funded by some of the engineering firms in Australia, for instance. But what's more important, those ideas too would go back to all those universities and as practical solutions, implemented solutions from this whole process, go into curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Go back into curriculum as something actually done and practical solutions mm-hmm. for the developing world. Another aspect is the linking into IITs, to engineering colleges in India itself. That's the next step.
Mm.
So the picture is eventually engineering universities all over the world relating to engineering colleges, universities here, having real situations and finally implementing.
Mm.
But Oroville's role as it's pivotal in a way. Oroville's is a trawl place, getting the best ideas. We don't have all the solutions. Why pretend? Let's use all the solutions from everywhere. Yeah? Bring it together and then coalesce it into something really practical.
Still, that is a process, yeah? How long does it take from, for example, that, I don't know, the NGO or the village contact you and you gather the things, gather the people and think about and come up with solutions? How long is the process? 5 years?
It's different in each organisation, but Joss can explain more the process that it took, but it doesn't usually take that long. So usually, maybe 6 months of starting to have conversations and then looking at different projects. Depends how far down the track the organization is really and what stage they're at how long that process can actually take. And then we look at placing a volunteer within that community as well to help raise the capacity of the community and provide that technical expertise. So it can really be anywhere from maybe 6 months and to a year, depending on the individual organisation.
Okay. So the Pichandikulam, the connection with Engineers Without Borders, is you are working on the future project, but also in the past you work on any practical solutions before with them?
Yeah, it's years now. We've been sharing information on many things. We've had volunteers here, as I said, between the GIS, the mapping part, water treatment systems. Chris and Joe were with us for a whole year. This work is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
This work is like hardware and software. The empowering thing of the challenge is that 9,000 plus students are getting their brains in the right place when they're dealing with engineering solutions. It's not just some funny hypothetical thing in their curriculum. This is exciting. To hear these presentations in Perth was amazing. The detail, but they all started by the understanding that they'd got of what really the developing world or the other side of a village in India means, you know, and that's what's critical.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, as we know, is not so much here; it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if that can start to wind down a bit in its consumerism, in its the madness, whether it's in the developed world, then it'll be much easier that sustainability succeeds throughout the planet. And this is what was getting through to them. They were seeing equity. They were seeing, and understanding that solutions perhaps were quite simple. And some of the solutions were not all technical. Some of the solutions, the real solutions, are to do with traditional systems. Some of the solutions are to do with looking at the whole watershed. They look at water, how to fix the problem with some plastic pipes or this sort of technology or, the latest whiz-bang thing. The most important thing is to have a good water table. And to get a water table, you've got to have a healthy catchment.
Yeah.
And this is the things that came back to them. This was sort of, this is mind-blowing because it's a different way of thinking. Yeah, this was different sort of thinking for these people. And you could see their minds, their young minds, and their first-year students. It's exciting. I think it's time.
You had that feeling that you're actually really getting to know something completely else than your reality.
Yeah, definitely. I've only started traveling to India maybe about this time last year, and it is mind-blowing the first time that you see it. And going through your education in Australia, and I'm sure this is the same around the world, you may not necessarily get a deep understanding of the different cultures and different ways of life and different issues that people face around the world either. So that's what's really great about this program is it provides that exposure and that real world connection for the students around the world to really start to appreciate some different ways of living and to start looking at traditional systems and thinking about what we can learn from that as they're going through their engineering careers.
It's actually bring us to a global village,
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, a global village that's all looking at moving forward and all looking at making, I guess, the place we live in a little bit more sustainable.
Was there any project you were really proud of or enthusiastic about it?
Yeah, so I guess my background has always been in the engineering education, and so which is why I'm working on the EWB Challenge and projects with university students. And I think one of the proudest moments for me is seeing those light bulb moments when the students really just start to understand and start to understand some of the cultural appreciations and how that really works. We had a great story when we were working on the challenge with Pachandakulam with some students back in Australia, and they were trying to incorporate chitosan, which is a shellfish derivative, into their water filter. And shellfish is not commonly consumed in the Hindu religion, and so it would have been culturally inappropriate to use in the village of Devikulam here in India. And it was watching their interaction with a tutor from the region and them understanding that you could never sort of get past that that cultural perception and those light bulb moments where they thought, well, maybe we should try and look at maybe some of the local plants, like the pomegranate and the javelin plants, instead of the shellfish derivative, because that would be more appropriate. Mm-hmm. And really seeing them start to make those cultural connections, so it was really quite amazing.
Oh.
So I think, yeah, those light bulb moments are just incredible.
It's an indicator that the planet is changing, that humanity is changing, that, as she said, not only technical solutions, it's not only technical, but it's got deeper impact. So I see actually a really bright point of where the whole planet is going, not just this part of where we are.
Yeah, it's all about partnerships. And maybe, I mean, that context is, if Auroville can learn that, practice that even more. We do it in this unique, amazing way, but just India at the moment, India, we're surprised how much government, that's also Tamil Nadu or centre, it's just when you start talking about that Auroville can be the partner for rural India, from some of its solutions of how to live in rural India, then they're very, very interested. And this gives a purpose that they can understand. If we try to say, yeah, we just like living in nice forests and meditating or having our matchmandi or whatever, then it's sometimes, let's be realistic. Some people are perhaps even cynical. But if we are sharing, and because we've got this unique position of being a place where many, many, many people are coming all the time, it's very easy. It's a model for a sort of Engineers Without Borders place, because people can come in here, see a whole lot of stuff going on too, and help to get that out. Because these solutions going out to the village of Devi Kolam or Nadikupa or whatever, of course they're all coming from Auroville. But now we've got these thousands of partners out there, you know, students and organizations. That's really exciting. And what they're doing, not just here, but feeling, for instance, their relationship with Aboriginal communities in Australia, which is a huge challenge. You know, it's one of the biggest, the nastiest stories in the world, the Aboriginal story, just like any cultural, whether it's the Indians or whatever. But to get solutions back into the making their communities healthy or helping them make their communities healthy is usually to do with relationships between, white and black, you know. And this is what, it's amazing, the stories I heard and the pride and the genius of some of these Aboriginal people who came to the conference. The lucidity, the clarity. Wow, it was humbling for everybody. It was humbling for everybody. It was amazing. And it was always about that things started working right if people respected traditions. People respected traditions, and then communities started working together on technical solutions. And then the fun really begins. It's like, you know, another aspect of the conference, for instance, was the amount of people that talked about poo was extraordinary. And these are the tops of BHP Billiton, you know, or Arup or whatever. Because this is actually one of the great problems. Just these things you get through to an engineering student, that it is not actually such a good idea to mix our human waste with water. But just this is the genius of the, I don't know, the English or whatever, maybe by, you know, where they thought up to put it underground and whack it into the Thames, you know, they thought that was a great idea. Yeah, just like they thought capitalism and communism was a great idea. Anyway, that's another story. But by putting it into the Thames, yeah, it didn't really help. So compost toileting, you know, these people are seeing that that actually has to come into cities, into big buildings. In the end, we will be, our buildings will be designed that the waste goes up into the roof in the form of vermicompost and grows your vegetables and comes down into, etc. If these cities, which are more like cemeteries at the moment, are going to become livable. But this, when you start talking like this in a conference, then people's minds start to bend a bit, and these students particularly. Or we don't have to just have the latest, you know, flush toilet system or whatever in Devikulam village. No. No, that would be a disaster.
Thanks a lot for coming.
You're very welcome. It was a great opportunity to talk to you all. And if you want to know more about the Engineers Without Borders organisation, just have a look on our website, which is www.ewb.org.au.
I will add up a link.
Great.
Thanks. Thank you, Joss.
That's okay. Better get back to the chainsaw. Thank you.